As you know, as I've said a couple of times, we're talking about the Zen Oxherding pictures this year. And just introducing everybody to the pictures and sharing some thoughts about them in this first month as we start out. So today, Susan and I are going to share some of our experiences and reactions to these pictures. We've been around for a while, so we've heard of them. We went through them with Rodney. We have our own views about them and how we feel about them and the way they've been helpful. And so I think that hopefully what we have to say will give you some sense that we may all respond a little bit differently to these Oxherding pictures, and that's fine, accepting our own responses as okay and a place where we can learn from, not feeling like it has to be any one way. And maybe also some sharing some thoughts about how to work with them as we go through this journey and kind of accept and maybe benefit from the places where they're sort of confusing and maybe frustrating even. So the Oxherding pictures provide a kind of a analogy or a parable, or I'm not sure what the right is, a story about the spiritual journey with this metaphor of the ox. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but I'll just briefly talk a little bit about the journey just so you kind of know what we're talking about here if you haven't already Googled them and gone online and looked at them. So the journey starts with the ox herder lost and confused, searching for the ox in this kind of confusing woods and wilderness. And then they glimpse the footprints of the ox. They glimpse the footprints of the ox and then catch a glimpse of the ox itself. And so this is exciting. Ah, it's there. Then the ox herder actually catches the ox and gradually tames the ox. So it kind of follows the ox herder's commands and then rides the ox home. And then the journey goes even beyond the ox and even beyond the ox herder themselves, returning to the source of all things. So it's sort of a transcendent, mysterious part. And then after this realization, the ox herder returns to the everyday world with new understanding and ready to do what is needed with helping hands to make this society a better place. So it's a really beautiful depiction of the spiritual journey, and there may be parts of it that you feel really connected with. There may be other parts that feel kind of confusing or mysterious or distant, but I think we can all sort of appreciate the beauty that is there in this depiction. So now for me, I encountered the Oxherding pictures pretty early in my meditation practice. In fact, I think I encountered them before I would say that I even had a practice. So at the very beginning, when I guess I was in that sort of stage of the searching around, not even knowing what I was looking for, the first Dharma book I read was The Three Pillars of Zen by Roshi Philip Kaplow. And when I read this book, I didn't really have much of an idea about Zen practice or any kind of meditation practice, really, except maybe kind of sitting and watching the breath after a yoga class or something like that. And when I read the book, I have to admit too that I didn't really understand a heck of a lot of what I was reading. But somehow, even though I didn't get it or didn't even get it enough to know how much I didn't know, something about the book was really intriguing. And at the end of the book were these ox herding pictures, each of them with a little poem and this, lovely sort of Asian painting with this ox herder doing whatever the ox herder was doing, and a short commentary about each picture. And I really love these pictures. I mean, I like Asian art, and I like all of the old you know, poems of the wandering Japanese and Chinese monks and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm into that kind of stuff, and I was even back then. And so I really loved the pictures and remembered them, even if I didn't understand them. You know, I thought, oh, these are just really cool. So with that beginning, you might have thought I would have taken up Zen practice, but as it happened, I went to a Vipassana retreat, which was really inspiring for me. And then I heard about Rodney, our founding teacher, and took a class from him. And that just felt right for me. So I continued in that insight meditation Theravada path. But still, you know, I knew about the oxherding pictures. And so then, I guess it's kind of getting to be quite a number of years ago now, Rodney announced that he was going to teach a series on the 10 oxherding pictures. And so I thought, oh, wow, I was very excited. I've seen the pictures. I love the pictures. I thought this would just be really, really great. And now when Tweri and Tim have announced that they're going to do the oxherding pictures, there's some of that kind of same feeling now too, this sort of, oh, I'm happy and excited. Oh boy, oxherding pictures, yay. So, you know, I just love them. I think they're really beautiful and inspiring. But even for me, coming to these pictures with this attitude of a really positive attitude in the sense that, oh, I just love them and they're so beautiful, working with them is not always a smooth process. And I remember when Rodney did his series, there were times when I felt really excited and inspired. And I thought, oh, wow, that's so beautiful. That's just what I felt. That's just what I needed to hear. Oh, now this is clear to me. But there were plenty of other times when I wasn't sure what the heck Rodney was talking about. And times when I couldn't figure out what he was saying had to do with the picture we were covering that week. I thought, well, where is he going with this? Or maybe sometimes I even felt like, well, that doesn't seem like my experience. I'm not sure I even feel the same way about this as what he's talking about. So there was excitement and appreciation, but there was, I had my share of confusion and frustration too. So even coming from this place of loving the oxherding pictures, even for me, they bring up a lot of questions about the path of practice, confusion about how to understand them and to interpret them. And I think that's probably not too surprising. To start with, as Tweri has already mentioned, the oxherding pictures are from the Zen tradition, so they're in a Zen style and illustrate the Zen view of practice. And so with the style, that might be a little uncomfortable. I think, you know, most of the time our teachings in our tradition are pretty straightforward, you know, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. Actually, you know, putting them into practice and realizing them is no easy thing, and it isn't that straightforward, but when we hear about them, they make sense. We can understand in the intellectual sense, but in the Zen tradition, things can be a lot more vague. Poems, stories, analogies. And so instead of understanding them in this linear way, there's more kind of feeling into the meaning. And I really kind of like that. I appreciate it and kind of enjoy it. And I think it sort of captures some of the feeling of the teachings that it's hard to put into words for me. But at the same time, I also realize that I might not appreciate that nearly as much if I didn't have the very clear and straightforward and logical presentation that we get a lot of the time in our lineage. So maybe it's the clear instructions that I've received from my Theravada teachers that help me to really appreciate these stories and metaphors and understand what they're pointing to in this Zen presentation. So that's something to think about, you know, working with the different styles and kind of feeling like it's not something that we need to fight against, but maybe complement what we know. And another aspect isn't just a matter of style, but the way the path is conceived in the different traditions. So in the Theravada tradition, the path might be described a little differently. Not totally different, but, you know, kind of differently. And like for me, I know I've done a lot of practice in the Burmese tradition, and so I'm really familiar with the Mahasi Sayadaw path with the progression of insight. And that's a little bit different from the Zen tradition. So with the ox herding, when you read about these ox herding pictures, you get this kind of feeling of you catch the ox, you tame the ox, and then you ride the ox calmly home and to beyond. So there's this sort of sense of riding calmly into this mystery. But in Vipassana, you know, it's kind of different from that. It's sort of more like you catch the ox, you tame the ox, and then ride the ox home through all this scary and difficult terrain, where we're investigating dukkha, we're feeling impermanence, we're seeing the fragility of ourself and the impermanent and impersonal nature of everything, and we're just kind of getting freaked out by all of that. And, you know, so it's not necessarily a smooth and calm road. There's a lot that has to do with pain and chaos. And it's not because we haven't tamed the mind and our mind isn't really where it should be. It's more because we're seeing things as they really are. We're seeing unsatisfactoriness and still instability and impermanence. So it's kind of more like we have this tame and reliable ox that we can ride that sees us through all these ups and downs and dangers and fears that we go through when we're working out the Four Noble Truths for ourselves. And I don't feel like that part of the path is really captured in the ox herding pictures. So it doesn't quite fit my experience. And for a while, this was really a problem for me. I felt a lot of confusion because I felt like I had to find the right way to practice or choose a certain way or argue for my way as opposed to some other way. But you know, I'm beginning to realize that if I do that, I just really cause a lot of trouble for myself. And really, no description is going to fit perfectly. And nobody's path is exactly the same. So it isn't really a matter of right or wrong. But just, you know, to see how things unfold and what makes sense to each one of us. So it's a lot wiser for me to admit that at some point, I really just don't know. And then to let things unfold, see how they unfold. So if we try to force our experience into some preconceived idea of what the path is supposed to be like, or spend all of our time looking for the next stage or the next marker, it's really painful and it keeps us from seeing what's really there. So I encourage you not to do this, but I also recognize that a lot of times we have to do it to realize that we shouldn't be doing it. And I know that's certainly the case for me. And I want to try to hurry up so Suze has time. But, you know, another thing I found really helpful with the ox herding pictures is something Tuari has mentioned and Rodney brought up too in his series. And this is that we shouldn't just see this as a linear path. A lot, it can be more like a spiral. We go through these stages over and over again at a deeper level each time. Or maybe every time we discover something new in practice, we feel like we're back at the very beginning. Or maybe every time a new insight is recognized, we feel like we've glimpsed the ox again over and over. And even in the course of a single sit, we might go from one moment when we're calmly riding the ox home to the next moment where we're struggling to tame an unruly ox or even chasing off after an ox that's gotten away and run off into some field. So, you know, it's not just a linear thing. We go through these over and over and we can see them in the present moment too. So just to summarize, I'd really encourage you to, you know, embrace the poetry and art of the ox herding pictures, even if you don't quite connect with the commentaries or with what we say about them. You know, just embrace the art and find your own kind of maybe heart connection to that. Remembering this is one description of the path. It may not quite fit your experience. It probably won't totally fit your experience. And so not worrying about that too much, but just being open to different ways of seeing things that maybe you hadn't considered before. You know, not judging your practice by where you think you are with these pictures, worrying if there's something you haven't experienced, doesn't mean there's anything wrong with your practice at all. So you really, you know, trust your own experience, respect your own natural unfolding, and learn what you can from them. Even if you like them, not being surprised if there's not only delight and inspiration, but a lot of confusion and frustration and aversion. It's normal. And most especially, enjoy the journey this year. So I'd like to turn things over to Suze now to give her perspective on the ox herding pictures.
Thank you, Lyndall. When we met, we felt that we were a good pair for this morning because Lyndall was so excited about exploring it, having read Philip Kempo's book and loving that the Chinese and Japanese poetry from that time and stuff. Well, I had a bit of a different experience. My introduction to the ox herding pictures was back in 2008 when Rodney gave a 5-month series on it. And mostly it was a major hindrance attack of aversion and resistance. It's been a long time, so I don't know all of the details of that resistance. And you know, sometimes those of us who've sat with a bunch of different teachers, you know that, you know, sometimes a teacher will say the words and it's just like there's a direct portal right into us, into mind and heart and body, and it just fits. And then other times you go, what? What is she saying? What does this have to do with anything? So you never know whether some of it was that. But when Tim and Tuwari announced this year that what this year was going to be, the whole year on the ox herding stories, my stomach just clenched because I didn't know all the details of my resistance and aversion, but I remember the aversion. I remember just those 5 months were difficult. I kept going. I'm one of those people, I show up, but I just was really confused. And so, you know, I did what a good yogi will do. I decided to investigate what was all this resistance about. You know, so I read some stuff about the ox herding stories. I listened to a couple talks. And then I started to really investigate the nature of my resistance. And I want to share some of these reflections with you. Maybe they'll be helpful if, as Lyndall so lovingly presented, there might be times when you just go, what? And I don't like this. And what are we doing here? So the first reflection that I realized was how much I like clarity. And I've been reading in a Dharma study group, Ajahn Sumedho's book, The Sound of Silence, which, by the way, is a wonderful book. And there's a small section at the back of his book where he talks about his desire for clarity. He said he just used to hate feeling confused and how much he wanted what he calls the big guys. Those are those big Ajahns to tell him this is right. That's wrong. This is good. That's bad. You should do this. You shouldn't do that. And of course, over time, he realized it was a fool's hunt. You know, as he started looking at the confusion, and in his words, he says, when he began to embrace it and totally accept it, it dropped away. He goes on to say, we're asked to take refuge in our own ability to be awake, to pay attention to life, no matter what the conditions might be in the present moment, and to get it wrong at times. And he says, and this is a good reminder, there are always going to be something wrong. We live in this conditioned realm. So, and this is coming from a teacher in our tradition, our Theravadan tradition, And as Lyndall was pointing out, you know, the teachings are real straightforward in ours. And Zen is not that way. And I know that over during my practice, there was a time when Tewari was really into sharing koans. And, you know, they were challenging because they don't really have a clear answer. You know, it's that, what's the sound of one hand clapping? It's like, what? You know, so I identify a lot with that, with Ajahn Sumedho's desire for clarity and away from confusion. A second reflection, which I think is really more important for me personally, is I realize how much I live and operate in the world of the left brain. Linear, organized, planning. First you do this, then you do that. You set a goal and you do all these steps and they're outlined along the way and you accomplish them and then voila, you're done. You know, you've accomplished it. And of course, that's not true in our practice. It's not linear in that way. But I've noticed, and when I was reflecting on my resistance to the oxherding pictures, I realized that that is one of my realities that I have to deal with, that desire for things being linear and that I know what's next. You know, I've been open to right-brained activities pretty much my whole life. I love poetry. I like tarot cards and readings and the I Ching. And I smudge my house with sage to cleanse it and stuff. But I've always felt that that's kind of like kind of woo-woo stuff over on the side. And I think that embracing a little bit more of this right brain openness of to mystery and poetry and things not being linear, it can be really helpful. Back in 2008, when Rodney was giving these talks, I don't think I was really in that kind of place. One of the things that, as I reflect back then, that I was really happy about and I want to share with you is that even though there were 5 straight months of me going, what? I don't like this. What am I doing here? What is he talking about? I never thought about leaving. And when Lyndall and I first met to talk about this, I said to her that even though it was such a constant aversion attack, it never led me to walk away from the practice. It was never like, well, this ain't working, I'm out of here. And I think back then, and certainly it's true for me now, is I really know the benefits of my practice. And I want to encourage you that if you do find that there's some resistance, that you really think about what are the benefits of your practice. You know, how do the sits, the sanghas, all the talks, the Kalyanamita groups, the retreats, the interviews with teachers, all of the different things that we do, how they come together and benefit us personally and then by extension, all those around. It's looking at the benefit of the practice for me really deepens my faith in the practice. It's that verified faith. It's looking at the times when I could call BS on myself, when I start believing certain things, and then I just go, wait a second, this isn't true. Or when I don't go down the rabbit hole of the stories that I've created and I stop, I feel myself being drawn into that and I stop. Or all the times that I'm able to actually sit with the unpleasant, the painful, the unhappy, the difficult, even if only for a moment or two, the realization that I actually know how to find quiet, even in the midst of a lot of turmoil, that I know how to avoid saying and doing unskillful or harmful things, that I have built a practice of kindness and generosity. It's the ability to do just what Ajahn Sumedho was talking about, taking refuge in our own ability to be awake, to pay attention to life, no matter what the conditions might be in the present moment. We don't usually use terms like this in the practice, but when I was reflecting on, even with the aversion, and I realized that the hindrance of aversion just comes with the territory of being human. So it wasn't like there was something wrong in those 5 months. It was just what was happening. It was just, you know, it was, I think, partly that I was confused and I didn't like confusion. It was partly that I wanted things to be linear and they're not linear. And it was partly that for whatever reason, the words and the way the teacher was sharing it didn't resonate for me. And that all happens sometimes. And so when I look back at it, I realize it wasn't really a problem. And now here I am at the beginning of our whole year, and I really am excited. I think that I've learned something about the role of resistance and aversion. I think I can be way more comfortable with receiving the Dharma as it will be presented. Allow the mystery of it. Be okay if it doesn't make sense right away. Just encourage my imagination and curiosity. And if resistance or aversion arises, you know, just be okay with that. Know that just like all conditioned things, that will arise and pass away too. You know, once Rodney was done with his series, I don't remember having the same kind of aversion to the next thing that he talked about. So I want to really encourage people, just like Lyndall was saying, let's approach this year with kind of a fun openness, curiosity, and eagerness to learn the kind of non-linear side of the Dhamma, to do what the poem said, you know, that not knowing, we fly onward. I just love that phrase from that. And then, you know, that we're often encouraged to have a beginner's mind, to go back to just that place when you first started practicing, and there were so many questions of like, what's this? What's going on? Am I supposed to do something? No, I think I'm just supposed to observe what's happening. Well, let's kind of engage in that same kind of way. You know, like maybe not even look at the commentary. Just what do the pictures say to you? It's kind of like going to an art museum or a gallery. You know, you don't have to read what the curator said. You can just look at it and go, wow, what's over there in that corner? And so just being really open and bringing our curiosity, and know that our practice is already good. You know, that's why we show up every Sunday and Monday and Thursday and all the drop-in sits, you know. So we're in this together, and let's just have some fun this year. Thank you for listening. So, love of stuff and resistance to stuff and all over the map. And that might just be what our year is going to be like. And I don't think last year incited that same kind of response, because it was Dharma in daily life. And if you didn't like the month on social media, you liked the month on boundaries. You know, I mean, it was kind of easy. So this will be, I think, a fun year. And we now have some time for breakout groups. And Lyndall, we didn't decide this. Would you be okay putting them into groups while I share about our questions? Would that be okay?
Yeah, that will be fine with me. I will go ahead and...
And as always, you're welcome to say goodbye if staying for the groups doesn't work for your schedule or whatever. Remember that we all benefit from each other from sharing our own experience. So if you can stay, it would be lovely to have you. So the question is really, do you have an attitude towards this topic? Had you ever heard of them before? Did you have any experience with it? Are you resistant, open, curious, averse, excited? Just kind of what where are you? Here we are in January, the first month of a new year. Those of you who are able to take the refuges and precepts together on Monday, the first Monday, you know, we just kind of reestablished our commitment to practice. And so here we are. We're going to be spending the whole year looking at our practice and the spiritual path. So that's, those are the kinds of questions. And Lindell's working on the groups. And I think we'll give you, so it's 2 minutes after 11. What do you say, Lindell? Like 15 minutes and then we'll come back?
I think 15 minutes is pretty good.
Okay.
And I've got the groups ready. You'll have, you know, probably 3 to 4 people. So I will go ahead and create the groups and you can proceed. So now we have some time for questions and comments. If anybody has anything that they would like to share about the group or anything you would like to ask me or to ask Suze, you're welcome to do it. Probably the easiest way is to put up your little hand, and I already see a little hand. Charlotte.
Yes, thank you.
Your hand is up.
That your and Suze's talk were so well balanced, because I relate to Suze and with the resistance. And then in the breakout group, we talked about it, and one person said, well, maybe we can look at this as in humor and just see what we can do. And so that's what I'm going to do, is just look at it and go along with Lindell and see what happens. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Charlotte, so much for sharing that.
And the humor is also at ourselves. You know, I can't find Charlotte now. Oh, there she is. You know how? Anyway, we can just laugh at ourselves and whatever our response is. And it's like, oh, this is happening now. Oh, great. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, when you look at those pictures, there's a certain amount of humor there, too, with these little figures looking this way and turning that way and all kind of, you know, the different places that the ox herder is in is kind of funny, too, and what the ox does. So humor, yes. And let's see, Michelle, you had a comment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I really appreciated both of your personal sharing, and I think it was a beautiful bridge for all of us with both the difference between you and also this connecting with a very, another culture and the way that they present and what you've been through with that. So thank you. And I have a more specific question. I would really appreciate if in the chat you would put the title and author of the poem.
Mm-hmm.
And also the title and author of that first book, the first Zen book.
Oh, okay.
That you mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah. So those that are great resources.
Okay. Yeah. That book has the most, I think, the most lovely translation of the poems. So I will do that right now. Let's see, maybe, will I type?
Well, if you're doing that, I'll ask Sean and Bruce if they'd like to share something. And good morning, glad to see you.
Good morning.
Hi.
Will you be showing the pictures as we go along? I know I Googled them, and I've also read that sometimes there's 8 pictures, sometimes there's 10 pictures.
Great suggestion. I will send it to Tawari. She'll be back one of the weeks this month, and I think we'll figure out maybe they can get put on the website. And I don't know, Susan might have a sense of whether that can happen. But thank you, Sean, because that's a great idea, mm-hmm. And I'll try to make it happen.
Yeah. It would be nice to see go to a place where you can see all the pictures that we're going to be working with each month. But what I was thinking of like sometime this month, I guess we're working with the first picture. I'm not really sure how.
No, we'll do the first picture in February. Okay. January is just kind of an intro.
Gotcha.
Setting in context.
When we get to February, if you could do a screen share, you know, at mm-hmm. some point during, so we can see the picture. Correct. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yes, thank you. Really good idea.
Yeah, I think it's in the plan somewhere. Yeah.
Okay. Then the other comment I want to say is, I think I shared this in the group. I had a feeling that I was being prepared to go into the worst place that I've ever been in my life. Like, I mean, it was like a pep talk, you know. And be aware that you might like really get in the really. But then I thought, well, but that isn't that the way? My life is like that, you know. There's just times in life where things are just really challenging. So anyway, I thought that's kind of funny. Wow, why are they talking about this? Like, boy, this sounds really serious. This sounds like this could be really tough. Maybe it will be. I don't know.
Well, Sean, Tawari really encouraged all of us local Dharma leaders to share our own experience. And so it just so happened that Lyndall and I were this first week. And then I think, Arv, you're coming up later on in the month, aren't you? Are you with Lauren? Are the two of you talking? I can't remember who you're with.
I can't remember who I'm with either.
Yeah, but anyway, so you'll get different experiences, and theirs may not be, oh my goodness, it was so hard. It might be something totally different. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. Well, I thought I saw somebody and then...
Yeah, Leah has her hand up.
Oh, okay.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for this talk today, and good to see everyone. I think in our group, we all ended on the note of just being curious about how, and for to use a metaphor, like which doorways people enter to try to understand the pictures, and using the right and left brain, and just as all the different traditions of Buddhism sort of come from different directions, that it'll be interesting to just learn from each other and to experience our own way of doing, practicing with these. And I think we were all looking forward to it. That's what I remember. Yeah. So, and I kind of lean towards right brain stuff. But I have to work in the left brain world all the time, so I'm kind of excited to have a little bit more, you know, some image to practice with. Mm-hmm. That's it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I think it will be a fun month, and we may end up really sharing stuff we don't usually share about our own experiences of the path. So it'll be interesting. And let's see, Susan, you have your hand up too.
Oh, which, oh, me, Susan, or?
Yes, you, Susan.
Yes. Susan, so, what a great discussion, and thank you both again. In our group, we were initially confused why we're not seeing the pictures. And, you know, we talked about that and how we might want to be trying to figure it out. So one of the things that I took away from our group conversation was that how much I'm looking forward to letting go of not trying to figure it out, but more about, you know, what do I interpret through my own experience, my own heart, my own truth. And it comes back to this not being afraid of what's true for me in this moment, and that's enough, that verified faith, that when I really am embracing that, you know, the self releases and there is more spaciousness into my experience and my, you know, understanding by not knowing. And then the other piece, so it's okay, whatever I see, and I do expect humor, and I did already see humor, so I'm glad you mentioned that. But the other thing that our group talked about is how similar this journey through the Zen practice is to the hero's journey of Joseph Campbell as laid out, and also the tarot cards, which one of my group members said, there's a direct, you know, there's placement. And so, which for me says, the spiritual journey is here for all of us, no matter what portal. I think someone mentioned that. But portal, there are many portals, but here it is, the spiritual journey, if you will. And I really look forward to looking at it that way without trying to pigeonhole a specific tradition or religion inside of that. So thank you and look forward to that very much, everybody.
And Linda, why don't you go, and then that can be our last person because we need to get to our...
Okay, I just appreciate the sharing from the teachers, and it seems like there's a lot of variety in the way the ox herding stories are portrayed. So I just really want to acknowledge and appreciate the fact that Sims is exploring the ox herding stories, because it doesn't necessarily feel safe, and I just appreciate that. It's going to be an adventure, and it may not be comfortable for the whole year, but I just appreciate Sims going forth with it. So that's all.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I think it will be an adventure and challenging, but we will be safe. It may not feel safe, but I think we will be safe. So,
well, yeah. It feels like there's a certain trust.
Yeah.
That we can handle it, that our practices are strong, and that we'll get stronger together through it. So that's the sense that I got anyway.
That's a lovely way of putting it. And I think it's really true that Tim and Tiweri know how deep the practice is of the people who show up in the Sangha. And one of the lovely things that that Philip Moffat, who's been coming to do non-residentials for, I don't know, 10 years, maybe longer, he often will say, I love coming to Sims because people's practice is really committed and sincere, and that we want to chew on